Most people associate a shofar with the Yom Tov of Rosh Hashanah. It's one of the symbols of the Yom Tov. And we're very familiar with how the shofar works on Rosh Hashanah because we have it every year. We're used to seeing it. However, the Torah has another purpose for the shofar, another use of the shofar. And the Rambam describes it in Hilchos Shemitah V'Yovel, Perek Yud, Halachos Yud through Yud Dalet. And the Rambam writes, Mitzvah Saseh L'Tkoa B'Shofar Ba'asiri L'Tishrei B'Shnas HaYovel. That there's a mitzvah in the Torah to blow the shofar on the 10th day of Tishrei, otherwise known as Yom HaKippurim, during the year of a Yovel, once every 50 years. U'mitzvazu mesuru le-Beis Din Tchila, and that mitzvah is initially given to Beis Din, Shema v'avarta shofar trua v'kol yachid v'yachid chayiv l'tkoa. But in addition to the Beis Din having to blow the shofar, also each and every individual has to blow the shofar. Shenemar, taviru shofar. U'ma'avirin shofar b'kol gvul Yisrael, and shofros are blasted throughout Klal Yisrael, throughout Eretz Yisrael. Me Rosh Hashanah ad Yom HaKippurim lo hayu avadim niftarin lebatehen. And starting from Rosh Hashanah until Yom Kippur of the Yovel year, the avadim did not go home. They were not totally free yet. V'lo mishtabdim l'adonehen. But on the other hand, they also didn't still work for the masters. V'lo asados chozos lebalehen. The fields didn't go back to their original owners. Ella, so what was the status between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur of the Yovel year? Avadim ochlin, v'shosim, usmechim, v'troseim brosheihem. The avadim would eat, they would drink, they would rejoice, they had their crowns on their heads, whatever that might mean. Kivin shehigia Yom HaKippurim, and then Yom Kippur came, taku bezin b'shofar, the bezin blew the shofar, niftaru avadim l'batein, v'chazu sadus l'balahen. And then the freedom that we read about, and that we normally associate with the Yom HaKippurim of Yovel, finally happens on the Yom Kippur of Yovel, 10 days after the Yovel year has already begun. Now the questions are obvious. Why does each individual need to blow the shofar? Clearly the tekiah of Beis Din affects the freedom. So what does the tekiah of the individual accomplish? And furthermore, what exactly is the status of the slaves in between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippurim of the Yovel? Why would they still be in their master's home, yet freed from doing any work? How could you celebrate prior to freedom having been affected? What exactly are they partying about if they're still working? A second issue. Pasuk says, "Usfartem lechem imachras haShabbos," that we start counting Sfiras Omer, Sheva Shabbosos Tmimos, we count 7 full weeks. We're also told about the Yovel, "Usfartem lecha Sheva Shabbosos Shanim, Sheva Shanim, Sheva Pa'amim." Also 7 units of 7. We count 7 units of 7 years each until we arrive at the Yovel. Is that a coincidence? The numbers are exactly the same. Can that possibly be a coincidence? What's the connection between the 7 weeks we count to Shavuos and the 7 Shemitah cycles that we count to the Yovel? And a third issue. We generally associate the shofar with the Yom Tov of Rosh Hashanah, as we mentioned before. Many yeshiva-educated students probably wouldn't even be able to tell you that there's a shofar blasted on the Yom Kippur of Yovel. If they associate shofar with Yom Kippur at all, it's the Motzai Yom Kippur to signify that Yom Kippur is over, which is purely a minhag, obviously. But the mitzvah d'oraisa of blowing shofar on the Yom Kippur of Yovel is something that somehow gets lost on us. And in reality, the term Yovel itself is very closely linked with the shofar. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah and Daf Chavav tells us, Amar Rabbi Akiva, kishalachti la'arav yahoru korun ledachra yuvla. You know what they would call a ram in certain parts of the world? A yuvla, a yovel. That's what the pasuk means when it says that after Matan Torah, bimshoch hayovel himayalu bahar. What does it mean, bimshoch hayovel? After the final shofar blasts were blown, the Jews were allowed on the mountain again. So yovel relates to shofar. What are these 3 tekiahs, the tekiah of Matan Torah, the tekiah of Yovel, and the tekiah of Rosh Hashanah, all have to do with each other? Why does the shofar come up in these 3 areas? By Matan Torah, by Yovel, and by Rosh Hashanah. So those are the 3 issues I would like to deal with. Again, number 1, just the issue of what exactly is the status of the Eved in between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? Why is there a tekiah done by the Beis Din plus another private tekiah done by the individuals? Number 2, what, if anything, is the connection between the 7 groups of 7 days, 7 groups, 7 weeks that we count toward Matan Torah, and the seven groups of 7 years that we count toward the Yovel? And number three, what is this connection that the turn that the shofar comes up dafka by Matan Torah, by Yovel, and by Rosh Hashanah? What do they have to do with each other? So in order to answer these questions, there are three ideas that require clarification. First, what does counting represent? Why can't we just get a calendar? We're smart enough, I'm clever enough, that if you were to give me a calendar on Pesach and tell me exactly that Shavuos is supposed to be 50 days later, I can count the boxes on the calendar. I'll figure it out every time, I guarantee you, exactly when Shavuos is going to be. Why go through the motions of having to count each and every day? Have an alarm that goes off, that buzzes when Shavuos comes, or when the Yovel is. You could have a big timer in Times Square that tells us, or whatever, we're in Eretz Yisrael somewhere, that will tell us exactly where, when the Yovel is, and it can have, to the millisecond, you know, running down the time. What do I need to sit there counting each and every day? What do I have to go through the motions of actually counting? So Rav Nevin Sal Shlita explains that counting reflects the insignificance of the current moment and the focus on the goal. Meaning today is just a number. What is a number? It's a number to get me past now, just to get to the goal. We count to signify that another day is out of the way, and that brings us closer to that which we're counting to. That's why we don't count the day after the last day of school or the day after Shavuos. The main event is over. There's nothing to count for anymore. We need to find a new goal. Once we find a new goal, we count toward that. Right? Once the last day of school is over, we count to when camp starts, and then when camp ends, and when visiting day is, and then when the camp ends, etc., etc. We always find new goals to count toward. But we're always counting toward. We're never counting after. The second yisod is that the greatest satisfaction a person can have in life is the sense of freedom. Rabbi Simon, my Rabbi in Sefer Imre Baruch, quotes from the Drashos Maharam Brisk, who writes as follows: "From Alteni Amura Bekama Drashos Sharuchush Hayoser Gadol Mikol Aruchushim." Says I've already expounded in many Drashos about the idea that the greatest wealth one can have in the world, Hu Hacherus VaChofesh Me'al Hashibud, is freedom from oppression. The ha'onesh hayoser gadol mikol ha'onshim, and the worst punishment one can ever have, humisha yad vasuros, v'raglav banachoshtayim, ubo b'kivli barzel, is someone whose hands are tied, his legs are chained, v'halo einenu haraus kam lachamu ha'umos l'man hesek cherus. Just look at human history a little bit. Just think about, learn a little bit of history. See how much blood was spilled for the goal of freedom. How many people lost their lives on the altar of freedom? Shafchu damim kemayim avor ha'chofesh. Blood spilled like water for the goal of freedom. Ki ha'adam einenu adam ha'shalem imhu meshubad luzlaso. Because a person doesn't feel human. He feels subhuman if he doesn't have freedom. And finally, a third yisod, the goal that is signified by both the count of Sfiras HaOmer as well as the count of Sfiras HaYovel, is the same. The goal is a goal of freedom. You see, Kabbalah HaTorah, the Mishnah tells us, the Mishnah in Avos, Parag Vav Mishnah Beis, is actually bothered by a question on the Pasuk. Pasuk says, V'amichtav michtav elukim hu, that it's the writing of God, charus al haluchos, engraved on the luchos. The only thing is, you know the difference between something that's engraved and something that's embossed? When something is engraved, it's not on the stone, it's in the stone. It's etched in. When something is embossed, it's on the stone. It protrudes from the stone. So the Mishnah is bothered. Charus al haluchos. If it's engraved, it should be biluchos, inside the luchos, not on the luchos. So the Mishnah says, oh, must be al tikri charus el cherus. Don't read the word as meaning engraved. Rather, it means free. That the word should be read as freedom, meaning receiving the luchos was the ultimate experience of freedom. Yovel also represents freedom. There's freedom for the slaves, there's even freedom for the lands. When a country wants to express its basic freedom, it inscribes the pasuk from Yovel. Right? Rav Shachter used to always say, he grew up in Philadelphia, so he always knew this pasuk. Ukrasem dror b'chol ha'aretz, and you shall declare liberty to all of its inhabitants. Where does that pasuk appear? On the Liberty Bell. When we want to express our sense of freedom, our sense of liberty, so that's the pasuk we use, the pasuk of Yovel. What is freedom, though? Granted, Yovel is freedom, Kabbalah HaTorah is freedom. What is freedom really, though? So there are two levels of freedom. First, there's the fundamental and basic freedom from a foreign oppressor. And that's symbolized by the freedom from Mitzrayim and the freedom of the slave at Yovel. But that's not enough. Rabbi Simon goes on to quote Rav Sadia Gaon, who writes, what advantage is there to such a freedom? If he's going to be someone who's still controlled by his desires, by his Yetzer Hara, and whatever the Yetzer Hara wants, he's going to lean him in that direction and move him in that direction to chase after everything that's unhealthy for him spiritually. Yom v'layla lo yishbos, and he's never going to rest. And you know what happens? A person has such a taiva for money, they work like dogs. They work like slaves. Harder than any slave can work. We've seen what greed can do to people. Now look, if you work for parnasa in order to support yourself, fantastic. But there's this terrible illness, this illness of love for money, where a person is never satisfied. And his entire day is spent as an eved working toward these empty goals. So the Beis Din blows the shofar to indicate physical freedom. Slaves can go home, but the Beis Din cannot guarantee spiritual freedom. For that, the Rambam writes, "Kol yachid v'yachid chayiv l'tkoa." A Beis Din's tkiyah is not going to be enough to ensure spiritual freedom. The Beis Din's tkiyah is only going to guarantee physical freedom. In order for the Eved to take advantage of his freedom, it's important that he understands that those activities he associates with freedom are not the ultimate goal of freedom. They're a hechi timtza towards freedom, but they are not it. They're the tip of the iceberg of true freedom. Therefore, he spends a week partying in between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. He's got food, he's got drinks, he's got a crown on his head, it's Rosheim Broshem, and he's enjoying life, and then the shofar blows. Then he goes free. What's he celebrating? He's tasted freedom already. But he has to realize that there's more to accomplish in the realm of freedom. This is also why there are two tekiyos at Kabbalah Satorah. One before and one after. We're physically free before. Yeah, Pesach is a Yom Tov of freedom. But we only become spiritually free after we receive the Torah. In lecha ben charin el misha osek b'Torah. Rav Sadia Gaon goes on to explain that this is the message of the shofar on Rosh Hashanah as well. He writes, "Val kei nomar b'Rosh Hashanah yom trua yilchem shu nilmad miyovel shuhu b'shofar." That Rosh Hashanah is a yom trua, and that's derived from Yovel, which we also use a shofar on. Asher tachliso shehichris shavadim yotzim lecherus. On Yovel, the freedom is obvious. The slaves are all going free. V'im kein gam ata ben adam teidas asher lefanecha. And Rav Sadia says, on Rosh Hashanah, the message is, we have to realize what's in front of us. V'komlecha savodo lo sasu. Don't do any melacha. Why not? Shlo tinhog minhag avadim. Don't act like an eved. V'teitzi l'chofesh mitachas yad hamoshal alecha. We should go free from those who are ruling over us, from the Yetzer Hara that rules over us. So what's the message of all three shofars, the shofar of Har Sinai, the shofar of Yovel, and the shofar of Rosh Hashanah? It's all one message. It's a message of true chayrus. It's a message of what it means to be a ben chorin. That a ben chorin is someone who's able to break free of the shackles of the Yetzer Hara, break free of the pressures that he self-imposes because of his desires to follow the Yetzer Hara, and understand that ein lecha ben chorin ela misha osek b'Torah, to engage completely in Avodas Hashem, to engage thoroughly in Avodas Hashem. Avodas Hashem isn't a minhag, it's something that's kavua in his life. And as such, he feels a true sense of freedom. Not just the physical sense of freedom, which we hope to all have, but the spiritual sense of freedom, which is so uplifting, and hopefully something we'll all sense this coming Shavuos, as again, we receive the Torah anew.